What does it mean to be an equestrian? It's more than just being a fan of horses. It's the riders, coaches, owners, barn staff, grooms, and other support staff. But it's also the people, family, and friends who make up the whole equestrian team. And this podcast is for all of you. I am so excited to be here with you as we explore life in and outside of the show ring. I'm Tracy Mitchell, and I'm here to help you hit your stride. So welcome everybody to this episode of Hitting Your Stride. And today I have with me Rob Mitchell. Rob was born and raised in rural southwestern Ontario, primarily calling Lucan home. And he is a self-described seeker of wisdom. From an early age, his athleticism allowed Rob to build self-confidence, which would eventually help him in other facets of his life. A love for football provided Rob a route to post-secondary education at McMaster in Hamilton, Ontario, where he majored in geography and sociology. It was here that he felt like his personal growth really accelerated and his insatiable curiosity began to flourish. Rob felt like this was an essential aspect in helping him to explore the big questions for himself, like, what is my role in this big, beautiful existence? In 2012, Rob followed his heart and enrolled in Teachers College at the University of Western Ontario. He has since worked with at-risk youth from inner city Toronto at an outdoor land-based school called Boundless. In 2014, Rob took his passion for education and combined it with his passion for fitness to create Whole Health Fitness in his hometown of Lucan. In 2018, Rob took his teaching talents north to a First Nations community called Lac La Croix. More recently, he just started his next leg of the journey, becoming school principal for the Lac La Croix First Nation. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
I'm so happy to be here.
So for those of you who listened to the first episode of Hitting Your Stride, people will have learned that you are my little brother.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, little.
Little, yeah. And you and I have had quite the journey. And through it all, I think we can both say that we're not just siblings, but I think we're also best friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And despite our age difference, we are close. We love spending time with together. I think the thing is we laugh a lot.
Yes, absolutely.
I used to drag you out to horse shows. I used to drag you out to the barn, you know, child labor. I used to put you to work. You were mucking stalls and grooming horses. So, you know, you've got a little bit of horsey experience. I think you even tossed you up onto Leuven once or twice.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 Those moments, are so fond. I remember thinking about it just in preparation for this podcast, reflecting on those times, you know, me between the ages of, I don't know, like what, 7 and 12-ish kind
of. Probably, yeah.
Really fond memories of going out to the barn and really not only developing a respect for horses and just the you know, everything really, like the healing power that they possess and just, you know, learning that, you know, animals have personalities and
yes,
all those life lessons I feel like were really formulated during that in my life. And I remember, going out to the field and bringing the horses in with you and mucking out the stalls and doing all that stuff. So yeah, it's a very treasured time in my life for that reason.
Awesome. All right. So I wanted to bring you on as a guest to talk about some topics that I know equestrians deal with. And the first one, big all the way around, hands down, is the importance of mindset and how adversity shapes you. So generally, like over the years of my role as an equine massage therapist, you know, and being a horse person myself, adversity, not only in your preparation for achieving your goals, whether it be the day-to-day riding, but big time mindset importance for going into the ring and actually in that moment of competing. So I know that I know a lot of people struggle with that. So I thought that was something important to talk about. Sure. So like your journey in life has led you to face some significant adversities. And I thought our audience would benefit from hearing how you overcame them. I admire your approach to fitness. I have ever since you were a kid. Your drive to push yourself, your self-discipline, that you have when you set work towards and achieve whatever you put your mind to is amazing. During your time owning and operating Whole Health Fitness, I know you worked with a few equestrians as their personal trainer. So you do understand a bit of the mindset of an equestrian athlete. And then lastly, was I thought it would be important for people to hear your ability to pivot. You're definitely someone who can adjust your sights when you feel like you need change in your life. Unlike your sister, me, who's not good with change at all, you are very good at change. So many people walk through their life feeling stuck or bored or afraid to step into something new. So I thought people could benefit, you know, any kind of key advice you might have to give there.
Yeah. So I guess really to just kind of speak to the overall kind of things that you want to explore and touch on, I guess adversity and mindset is something that is essential, because no matter where you go in life, you're going to experience some kind of disruption, some kind of challenge. And being able to understand that even though the challenge or the obstacle might appear to be different, your response to it never really changes. And I think it's really important to differentiate that you do have control and that you can explore it. So, and overcome it. And so maybe we can flesh out some of that.
Nice. All right. So in my first podcast, I did make reference to our father's battle with alcoholism. Mm-hmm. You know, and personally speaking, it wasn't easy for me. And I did share that as well, you know, through university. And basically I was helping to raise you.
Yeah.
I don't think I did that bad, huh?
No. And just to jump on that too, I often, obviously, when people are like, whoa, you have an older sister? Like, there's so many years between us. And I said, yeah, she's my older sister. She's one of my best friends. And at the same time, she's also my second mother. So I tell her, I never really got away with anything.
Right? Never.
That sibling side of you really wanted to stick it to me, eh?
That's right. So with those struggles, I mean, personally, I struggled with confidence. Mm-hmm. I struggled with my ability to find my voice, which I would like to say is kind of cool that right now I'm doing a podcast. So I think I'm finding my voice. It's pretty good.
Absolutely.
And I was often very cautious about stirring the waters around me. I mean, anybody who's been in an alcoholic household or knows an alcoholic, I mean, there is a lot to be aware of not wanting to stir the pot, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, basically you grew up experiencing this every day as well. Can you share with us how you managed to grow in the face of that kind of adversity at such a young age? Like, what kind of mindset did that create in you before your journey even got started?
You know what? Obviously, as I mentioned before, in preparation for this podcast, thinking about, you know, responses to these kind of questions and, you know, in particular with this one, thinking about what it was that allowed me to kind of stay balanced despite the unstable situation at times at home. I really can't put my finger on it, to be honest with you. I think that for all of, you know, our father's challenges and demons that he experienced, he also had redeeming qualities in
very
a way
much so.
That kind of allowed me to weather his storms, if you will, and yet kind of still go about my life as, you know, as normal as a teenager, young teenager can. I think about like his ability to kind of instill the idea that you grab life by the horns, right? You grab the bull by the horns, and kind of contradictory considering, you know, he struggled with an addiction, and, you know, if he had taken his own advice, maybe he could have permanently overcome it. But that remains in the past and stuff. Yeah. So I think there was something about my upbringing that, you know, was influenced by you and by mom. And there was always that island of safety, despite the fact that there were times that the ocean was tumultuous and things like that. So
yeah.
I really can't put my finger on it. I think that really the dad had a big impact on ultimately my ability to overcome adversity as a result of like his teachings he was able to instill in me. But in the same breath, at that point in time, I really don't know if there was something like one thing in particular that allowed me to kind of, you know, come out the other side, you know, okay, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our mutual story, like shared together, if you were to mirror it, is very similar. You know, even despite basically we grew up as only children because I was out of the house and, you know, you were just sort of coming into your own. It was definitely something that we both came out the other side really like strong people as far as what we were going to do with our lives and our ability to focus with them. So it was definitely a positive outcome. So, I mean, one of the ways in which Dad was very formative in your life was getting you involved with football.
Yeah.
Right. So absolutely. Football was a sport that was very formative in who you became as a young man. And it also was a big family connector for us. I mean, there was like a 5-day road trip that was involved with that. So it was a lot of fond memories when it came to trucking around the province and cheering you on. So that was, that was a lot of fun. So you started out in the London Minor Football League. You played for Medway High School. You played for London Falcons and then McMaster University. And you also went through the tryout camp for the Canadian Football League. So can you kind of just, you know, briefly sort of run us through your tenure through your football career?
Yeah, well, and, you know, like in your previous question, you asked me about something that really kind of helped me instill that kind of work ethic or that, you know, optimism or, you know, willing to accept adversity and challenges and overcome. I think football had a huge, huge impact on my perspective as a young man, because, I mean, you take a 60-minute football game. Throughout the game, there are, you know, balls that are dropped, you fumble, you know, like, you know, it's a constant struggle. It's literally life encapsulated into a 60-minute window.
Interesting, and,
you know, because it is filled with struggle, it's filled with competition, it's filled with all of these elements of life. And, you know, sure, like I failed a bunch, I dropped the ball, I fumbled the ball, I, you know, all these things. But at the end of the day, like, I don't know whether it was because Dad told me or coaches told me that, like, if you spend time worrying about what just happened and the opportunity that you missed, you're going to miss the next one that's coming. So it's like, get your head out of the sand, get your bucket strapped back on. And like, it's, you know, life's filled with opportunities. It just comes down to whether you're sensitive enough to realize that they're staring right you right in the face, right?
Exactly. So, and with that, I mean, riders all the time go in to with this plan and this goal of what this particular show or this class is going to be like. And God only knows, you know, you know, I remember one test I was riding dressage and, you know, all of a sudden around this one end of a building, somebody was carrying a pool noodle and my horse just went, I'm out of here. Right. So how do I deal with that? How do I get that back on track? I mean, a lot of the big show jumpers, if they refuse a jump, I mean, that can totally mess with a rider's mindset is how they get themselves back and focused.
It's sorry, just to like piggyback on that. I don't know what famous boxer it was that said it, but they said something like, you can go into any fight with a game plan, but it all changes once you get punched in the face.
That's a good one.
it's so relative to life. Like it's like, you know, you can plan out everything. And I think that rigidity, that rigidness that people have, that like A, B, and C must happen in order for D. Well, it's like, no, you could go to D and circle back and get C later, right? Like it's being flexible. It's being adaptable.
Nice. I love that. All right. So I do remember through years of knowing you and our conversations that share the story about Coach McGee, which I know was one of your defining moments in your life. And, you know, how I think, and I could be wrong, that's probably how or what set you onto the path you're on now.
Yeah. Well, basically what happened was all throughout my, I think maybe starting in grade 7 or grade 8, Dad and I would go to watch the Western Mustangs play every Saturday at 1 o'clock down there at the university. And it became something that we often went to every home game for several years. And I just became very passionate about football and really excited at the opportunity. And I told Dad, I was like, look, like I want to play football. I want to go to university and I want to play football. And all throughout elementary, I wasn't really the strongest student. I mean, like adolescent boys have their own challenges with staying focused and stuff like that, which I would put myself in that category. But I remember specifically saying to dad, like, this is something I want to do. And so mom and dad had organized a meeting with Coach McGee, who happened to be in a guidance counselor position at that time. And they had a meeting with him, and more or less what came out of the meeting was, is that because at the time I was in the applied stream, and in order to go to university, you had to be in the academic stream here in Ontario. And I was in the applied stream, and Mr. McGee more or less just told my parents that he didn't believe I was university material. And that, you know, and at the time, like I was in grade 9, and I don't want to give anyone the impression that like Mr. McGee has been a tremendous and positive force in my life for many, many, many reasons. But really this was the one that kind of lit the fire underneath my butt. In terms of, you know, like I'm the author of my own story and no one's going to tell me otherwise. And I remember dad, when mom and dad got home that night, and mom was rather like, oh, hey, honey, how's it going? And dad, I remember just walking in the door with like a bit of a scowl on his face. I could tell he had a chip on his shoulder, and yeah, sat me down and said, like, look, like you can listen to what he's saying, but like, if this is really what you want to do, you have 4 years of school still to go, right? Like you have all the time to align yourself to your goal and to make the time and to do the extra work. And so as it all unfolded, I ended up having to upgrade my math and my English credits, which required me to do school over summer. I mean, how many, like, unless you have to go to summer school, I willingly went to summer school. And so... and I must note that Mr. McGee was actually the teacher that helped me upgrade my English credit. So, it just goes to show that, like, just because he did have that pivotal point in my life or was a part of it, it doesn't mean that he didn't support me along the way, because he very much has. It was one of those things where I said, you know, like, this is not something that I'm going to settle for. And I've got things I want to do in my life. And one of them is to go to university. So
nice. So yeah. did that create a bit of a chip on your shoulder as a result of that? Was it always something that sort of got you going when you needed to get going?
Yeah, I definitely think it framed things for me psychologically. Like, it framed kind of an underdog mentality. And even to this day, like, I realize that, like, I'm very fortunate and I'm very blessed to, like, have people in my life that have also provided me opportunities to get where I wanted to go. But oftentimes when I venture into something new or I step outside of my comfort zone, psychologically, I'm already in a mindset of being an underdog. Like, go ahead and count me out. I dare you. Like, that's kind of my mindset. So.
Yep. Yep. I mean, that's what I told listeners in episode 1 about people that told me I couldn't make a living out of massaging horses.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And I remember dad with me one time, I was like particularly feisty about something, and he came up and he put his hands on my shoulders and he looked me straight in the eye and he goes, "That's my girl. If someone backs you into a corner, you come out swinging." And I'm like, yeah, damn straight, that is who I am. And we both have that type of mentality. And I think too, like, a lot of people don't. And if something or somebody can learn something from this conversation, or I'm finding that perhaps as a life coach, that this is where I really want to help people is with mindset. So I think it's pretty important.
For sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So just to go over your little timeline here with your teaching. So you went to teacher's college, then you went to Boundless and the land-based school. And it started out as a camp kind of first, didn't it?
Well, by the time I'd gotten there, it had already been in operation for almost 30 years, but it had originally been like a week-long camp where they would bring students from inner city Toronto up to this beautiful kind of central Ontario area. And they would take them on canoeing and, you know, canoeing trips anywhere from a week long to 10 days. And but I was very fortunate enough to land there kind of when they were starting the private school portion. So I got my feet in there and really connected with a whole bunch of different kids from
oh, different yeah.
life. And really powerful experiences for me.
Awesome. We will touch on that in a little bit. So when you came home from Boundless, that's when you started up Whole Health Fitness, right? Yeah. That was the four-year venture.
Yeah.
And then that led you to LAC, where you are now. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's obvious that teaching is in your underlying, you know, your connection with all of these things. What brought you to the teaching profession? So it seems like at some point in time, you know, in your journey, there has been something that has been required of you from that sort of teaching aspect. Is this a fair assessment?
I would say so. I think there are certain things about like my personality that predispose me to be a teacher. Like I don't like excluding people. I'm very inclusive. If someone's sitting off to the side and looks sad or lonely, I feel like I'm the person that'll extend a hand and get them to come in and join. And I remember talking to mom actually a few weeks ago, and she had brought up the story about the time where there was a girl, I was probably in grade 6 or 7, and she had her dolls her on the playground at recess, and I had no issue in going telling that bully that, you know, hey, give that back to her. And like, you know, and I remember her parents thanking mom for me, you know, doing that and being considerate. And so I think that like this, I have a predisposition in my personality that kind of wants to help people and to teach. In the same vein, I think after I'd gone to university, my enthusiasm for learning academically, so to speak, really flourished. And so I think it just went hand in hand that like I'm someone who looks to help people, but at the same time, I'm also like, hey, look, this is really cool. You want to learn about it? I get really excited. And, you know, a lot of my close friends will, you know, make, you know, caring but nerdy jokes about my personality at times. So
you're not nerdy at all.
Oh, thanks.
All right. So what did you learn about communication at each stop along this part of your journey? Like, tell me about getting through to some of those kids you worked with at Boundless and how you helped them break through. It started with the owner of Boundless asking you to start, like, set up a gym. It seems like wherever you go, a gym will follow.
Yeah, it's actually pretty wild how it seems to happen. But in terms of communication, I think the one thing that I realized, and to kind of obviously connect this back to like equestrians and their connections with horses, I think sometimes we become too goal-oriented in a way that we try so hard to make this one particular goal happen that we often forget about the importance of relationship and forging that connection. The one thing that those students taught me, it's interesting that I'm saying this because technically I was the teacher, but they were teaching me as much as I was teaching them. And the thing that I realized about communication was that in order for ultimately the goals, you know, that, you know, your end point where you're wanting to get to, in order for those to happen, there has to be that relationship. There has to be that connection. So my approach, especially when meeting new students or whatever it is, it's to allow them to not only see that I'm human, but also that I have interests, that I have hobbies, that I have passions, and being able to like forge a relationship with them before I ask them to go and step outside their comfort zone. Because these students in particular from inner city Toronto, you know, would be happy to flip me the bird if I asked them to write an essay on day one, right? And so it's not going to happen. What's going to happen is they're just going to resent me and push away. And so I think relationship building is the foundation of all, you know, individual goals, personal goals, as well as communal goals that you may share with a team or whatever it might be. So.
Well, it's interesting you said. I mean, I am in no way completely comparing inner city Toronto children to horses, but it is pretty much the exact same thing. I mean, so many people expect direct results out of requests from these horses without fully understanding the difference in communication.
Yeah.
Right.
And while I was at Boundless, we had this one teacher who was a few years older than me, but he was kind of like the master Oogway of the staff team, the kind of like the Zen teacher that was all kind of mellowed out. And he once said to me, and I'll never forget it, he's like, it's okay sometimes to shoot the arrow and then paint the target. You know, because rather than trying to shoot for the target and getting frustrated that you're missing, why don't you just shoot the arrow and then paint the target afterwards? And if you do that, you can paint yourself hitting a bullseye, right?
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I found it very like useful. And I often think about that when I'm either experiencing or experiencing frustration with perhaps one of my courses or, you know, maybe a former client was struggling with reaching their goals. It's like, okay, well, you know, let's stop trying to aim for the goal. Let's just shoot an arrow and see where it sticks. Right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now share, can you share that one story? I always used to love when you, when we connect and you tell me stories about working out with these kids. And I remember the one story you shared about this young girl, this young woman deadlifting her personal best. Like how could you see these kids change with the exercise?
Well, I think the thing is in particular with a lot of these kids at the time, a lot of them had no sense of what they were capable of doing and what they were capable of achieving. And the thing about physical fitness, and I feel like it's one of the greatest like foundational teachers in terms of developing the character, the discipline, like the perseverance and all of those kind of intangibles that you really can't measure, but you sense them when someone possesses them. I feel like you can really only develop those through some kind of physical challenge. And the thing about physical fitness is that every repetition is adversity, right? There's nothing comfortable about physical fitness. Was, then everyone would be doing it, but not everyone is. And a lot of people, and rightly so, and like people have made a career out of it. Like I made a living for 4 years helping people with that. And because of that, because not everyone can do it or knows where to start, people aren't necessarily sure about what they're capable of achieving or what's safe and all of these things. And in this particular instance, this young girl was, she was very much growing into her body. She was a bit of an awkward teen, I guess you could say, and a little bit uncoordinated, but she found some kind of solace, if you will, in the barbell. And we did some foundational kind of movements. So we did some squats and we did some deadlifts, and she really took to deadlifting. And so this kind of awkward teenager that was a little bit insecure, always standing at the back of the room, would like raise her hand very tentatively, really started to flourish because this personal empowerment that she'd channeled and that she'd found through something as simple as realizing how strong she really was. Like, it's empowering watching people. And that's one of the reasons why I started Whole Health Fitness, is because, you know, to help people take it to the next level and achieve their goals and stuff like that. So yeah, it was an amazing experience. And I've been very fortunate to witness quite a few people have those moments in their own personal journey.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So you do seem to have this knack of speaking to others intuitively through your connection with physical fitness. You know, what do athletes need to keep in mind when it comes to mind-body connection, especially when things become difficult physically and mentally?
I guess at the end of the day, it's like the older I get, the more I realize that it really just comes back to yourself, or in my case, myself. Like, you know, I think about challenges and adversities that I've experienced either in sporting events or in life. And at the end of the day, it's like, do I react or do I respond? And the older I get, I guess the further I, you know, the more I realize that it's the response. The response is, how do you respond to adversity? Like, what are you able to control right now? And when it comes to those challenges as athletes, whether it's equestrian or football or hockey, it doesn't really matter, because as I said before, they're going to experience adversity in that allotted time period of, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's show jumping or dressage or whatever. A lot of that is naturally can be found, I guess you could say, can be found in coming back into yourself. And I think that's really where, at least in my kind of exploration of this, I realized that there's a lot of wisdom in just watching yourself, observing yourself, taking time to like, you know, not like, I think it's important to practice these skills. I guess I should preface this by saying practice these skills, you know, in the evening or when you wake up in the morning, and being in control and being able to focus on yourself and on your breath. And then, because you can't ask someone to just overcome adversity in the moment if they've never practiced like the necessary skills to help them get through that, right?
That so, is so key, yes.
Yeah, so like making sure that, you know, yes, we all want to be more mindful, and yes, you know, doing a little bit more meditation every day would probably be good. But the thing is that unless you commit yourself to practicing those skills, that when you really need them, you know, maybe they won't be there because you haven't practiced enough. And I think in terms of connecting that mind body and being able to be even keeled, even when the storm is blowing full tilt, it's like, it really just comes down to centering yourself.
Well, and I think too, with riders and equestrians and stuff, I mean, being one with the barbell or the deadlift is pretty easy because you're just dealing with one mind.
Right.
But, right. Then you get into the ring, or you get into that moment of the pool noodle, and all of a sudden you've got a completely crazy thing on your hand that's thinking they're out of there. So, you know, it's like the human part of the equation, who's supposed to be the wiser, smarter part of it, which is not always the case, but let's just pretend, right? They, you know, they have to try to get this ship righted again. So, I mean, talk about a mental challenge there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. No. And that's the one thing that like I find absolutely beautiful about any of the horse sports really is the communication that exists between two minds, right? Because most of like what we consider to be mainstream sports, even the teamwork, say of a hockey team or a football team, we can easily communicate with each other, you know, using even sign language from the sidelines, or, you know, verbal, like we understand each other. But the beauty of the horsemanship and equestrians in general is that there are these barriers, these challenges that exist in communications, in ease of communication, that it really is beautiful. And to watch it kind of happen, or watching a successful rider complete a task with their horse, like, man, that's some pretty powerful stuff. And I find it extremely fascinating and beautiful. It's one of those things that's just just leaves me in awe.
Yeah, it's so powerful. So let's talk a little bit about whole health fitness. You grew something out of nothing very quickly and cultivated a dedicated and involved group of members at that gym. And I will honestly say, yes, it was your heart and your passion, and it's just, you're just a really likable kind of person. I think I think people are just drawn to you. I can honestly say over the years that, you know, if I tell people about my brother, I always end the statement with, my brother is one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. I think everybody should meet him. So, you know, with that in mind, I mean, you did this so quickly when you set this vision off of whole health fitness. And you evolved it into, like, by going through the training and the necessary time, you also developed a official CrossFit gym called CrossFit Kensho. So that was huge. And all of this hard work and dedication led you to being Entrepreneur of the Year in 2018. Am I correct?
Yes. Yep.
For Middlesex County, right? Yep. So, I mean, that was huge. What was your main purpose or drive in opening the gym?
Honestly, it was the exploration of myself that really drove whole health fitness coming to fruition. I realized that there was a deeper reality to physical fitness, and having someone who had spent since the time I was 13 in gyms, be it Good Life, be it LA Fitness, be it, you know, wherever. And so many people I realized were in the gym for their goals, but to me, I realized that there was something missing, something more of a spiritual component, a mindset component, an emotional component. And rather than just running for the sake of losing calories, or rather than just bench pressing for the sake of trying to increase your repetitions, there was a whole nother element, an undertone, if you will, that I felt like wasn't being acknowledged, but was equally, if not more important. And that's really your mindset. Like, why are you doing what you're doing, right? Are you really happy? Do you want more? Like, is there, like, all of these deeper questions. And I think that we live in a world that is at times very superficial. And I realized that there was, like I said before, more under the surface, more than what was really being celebrated, I guess you could say.
Right.
So when I kind of realized that, partially through doing Aikido and a few other kind of martial arts that really forces you to combine both the spirit, the mind, and the body into one, I realized, I was like, hey, why don't we try doing this with fitness? Like, you know, and that's really where whole health, the whole idea was, is that we're including the emotional, the mental, and the physical all in one. And even my logo was like three rings, right? Mm-hmm. Symbolizing the three spheres that really make up the human. So I really wanted to kind of provide a space where people felt like, yeah, I'm not being judged here. But at the same time, like, I'm here to celebrate what I'm capable of doing, right? And I think a lot of people are always looking at, like, what they don't have, like, what they're missing out on, or that their body doesn't look that good, or whatever it might be. When in reality, like, our bodies are beautiful machines, and a horse's body is a beautiful machine too. And like, all of these things, like, there's opportunities to celebrate, you know, what we're capable of doing. And it's such a beautiful thing. We talk about this young girl, like, deadlifting. It's like, she realized that she was capable of doing much more. And sure, she had the physical benefits that came with being consistent and being disciplined and trying deadlifting like three times a week and four times a week. But once again, like, the intangibles were really what mattered. It was the confidence that came about as a result of that, which now can be applied to other things than just deadlifting. And I think that's really what motivated me to kind of take Whole Health Fitness and provide a space for people to feel safe. But at the same time, if they want to, you know, yell and scream and let their inner warrior out, then it was a space that they could do that, and they could celebrate where they were at in their journey.
That's amazing. I know I let my inner warrior out a few times.
Yeah, you did.
In that gym.
And, oh man.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always say to people, I'm like, oh yeah, my brother owns a gym. Oh yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, no, you don't get it. Like, you know, people think that, you know, it's like you just assumed you were a muscle head or something, right? Like that, right? I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's like, it's a whole, you know, mind, body, spirit involvement. And it was just, mm-hmm. I'm watching you work with kids mm-hmm. in that gym was pretty phenomenal too, shaping young minds. That was awesome. So yeah. Did this journey with Whole Health Fitness take you in a direction you didn't expect? What did you learn?
Well, I would have to say the one that I realized that was partly the reason why I decided to move on was that I'm not much of a businessman. I feel like you know, like I said, I'm passionate about helping people, and I love one of my greatest thrills, whether it's in a classroom or whether it's in a gym, is watching a student or a client or whoever it might be accomplish something that they once thought, you know, a day, a week, a year ago, they were incapable of doing. And whether it's a box jump or a deadlift or a pull up or whatever, you know, like, those are the most satisfying moments I find as an individual, and watching the underdog overcome, you know. Nice. And sometimes it's like that underdog mentality is really just their own, you know, and being able to drive themselves and see the success that comes with the discipline and the perseverance. And I guess the thing that I just realized was that I'd rather spend time working with people than worrying about a business. And I understand that business is, you know, can be stressful, as I'm sure you've experienced, you know, having several businesses yourself, and it can be stressful at times. And I felt like it was really detracting away from my ability to not only connect to people, because my mind was elsewhere, worried about bills, worried about all these things. And it was just something, it was a time for me to move on. But I'm so very grateful for John Celestino and Patrick Ramsey and the crew that's still kicking it there in the old Luke and Jim Whole Fit. Slight modification to the name, but love to give a shout out to those guys, because they're doing awesome work and they're carrying it on.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah, that Patrick, he's a great coach.
Yeah, he's a great trainer.
Okay, so in your experience working with equestrian athletes, what sets them apart in your mind? So what areas did you notice that you had to pay attention to, keeping in mind the nature of their sport?
Right. So first thing, as we mentioned before, the fact that they're working with another mind is the first thing that stands out to me. Like no other major sport really communicates or has that animal person connection. So that's a big thing. But really, like when it comes to physical preparedness, I was very fortunate to work with Holly Evans there, and she's quite the athlete to begin with. So she had a good foundation. She had a track and field background. So she had the development already in place to really kind of mold and shape and really it helped her accelerate her abilities because she had that foundation. But with, let's say, more amateur riders or riders that want to just be able to ride for the rest of their life and never really have to give up their horse, my one observation that I realized was consistent across the board is just core strength. Core strength is, you know, obviously it's your core, it's the center of your body. And obviously, if you don't have the necessary ability or strength to either maintain a braced core or a core that is able to engage and resist as the horse moves, you're already at a loss. And so taking into consideration, not just doing sit-ups, but deadlifts, because they help to brace the core and strengthen the core and, you know, rotational movements as well for the transverse core. All of these things were big things that I found actually really helped my equestrian clients kind of not only get back in the saddle, if you will, but also really find a new form of enjoyment. And obviously with resistance training and training in general, you also reduce the aches and pains that may become with, you know, riding and stuff like that. So it's nice. A general kind of overall benefit, I guess you could say, and really focusing on that core.
Cool. Absolutely. Okay. So when you and I would work out together, and yes, everybody, he was my trainer, and people would ask, you let your little brother train you. We actually did quite well together. I was a pretty good person to work with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was always a blast.
I'd swear once in a while, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So we were always bantering back and forth, which eventually turned into pointed talks about fitness and how we could get riders to think about the development of their horse's athleticism along the line, as well as their own athleticism, right? Mm-hmm. So this led to our seminars called Partners in Programming. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun. So basically we were trying to get these riders who always tend to focus on the horse's development and the horse's ability. We were trying to kind of wake them up a little bit and go, all right, because I know as a registered equine massage therapist, when I'm working on these horses, my hands feel overdevelopment. They feel like taut to the point where something could just spring away. Right. And the tension and stress and the expectation. Whereas I always said, okay, if riders knew what it took to get where they wanted to be and actually did it for themselves, the development of the horse might be a little bit easier on the horse, right?
For sure.
So this takeaway and how we conceptualize riders and their conceptualizing their ability to develop their equine partners. So how big of a factor, like, do you think that was or is in the sport of equestrian riding?
I think it's everything. Honestly, like, whether it's a horse or a human, like if we're always pointing the finger and saying like, you need to get better, or you need to be better at this, or you need to take this jump at a certain speed, expecting the horse to just do it for, you know, be it your convenience or your enjoyment, whatever it might be that motivating you. We can point fingers all we want, but unless we start pointing thumbs at ourselves and saying like, hey, like, what is it that I can do for myself, but ultimately for this relationship? I feel like people would probably not only feel better about themselves because they're taking care of themselves, but I would naturally understand that like the relationship itself would quote unquote accelerate maybe in terms of bringing about the goals that the rider has in mind for the horse and for them, that you know, really just taking accountability. And I understand that like people might ride for leisure and they don't have any competitive goals, but at the very least, it's like, if you're investing time in something where you're trying to work with a horse in this case, it's like, what are you also doing to kind of bring yourself along? Right. Like it's, you know, relationships are not one-way streets, and if they are, well, then they're unhealthy. Right.
Yeah. And how about the big factor in all of this was the rider's grit? Like, you know, the whole grit factor. What did you, any input on that?
Yeah, it's like, what do you got, sandpaper? It's like, let's do this, right? Like, yeah, like the grit. It's all about that mental preparedness, like being okay with failure. Like, that's one of the biggest things that I think that generally athletes struggle with. Like, the ones that are successful, like whether it's LeBron James or whatever, but the athletes that are successful are the ones that move on from the failures but learn from them. And I think that really develops the grit and the ability to like persevere, because you're not separating your mind between, well, if I miss this shot or I miss this jump, then what's going to happen, right? It's like you're just 100% focused on the challenge in front of you. No fear, no ifs, and or buts about what might happen. And let's say you go through that jump and your horse knocks it over. Well, at the end of the day, it's like, well, you learn more from failures than you do success.
Right.
Because success sure is great and everyone wants it, but you know, failure is the greatest teacher. And it's really just shifting how it is that we see failure. It's not the end of the world.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is, it's hard, because I mean, I've seen so many clients over the years as a massage therapist and working with clients now as a life coach, where, you know, it all comes down to the confidence, right? Building it outside of the ring so they can reframe it and transfer it into the ring. So, you know, I think,
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I was just going to say too, like a lot of the clients that I worked with were also clients that were willing to explore other avenues in personal development that didn't necessarily have to do with the horse, right? And right. I think that's one of the beautiful things about equestrian sports, is that in a very real way, horses are a mirror to the person themselves. Like the things that we often get frustrated, you know, about with the world, let's say, have their origins within ourselves. Right? And it's like, if we're trying to get our horse to do something and they're not doing it and we're getting frustrated, it's like, you know, let's just take a step back. Let's not worry about this. Let's switch it up, right? Like, let's try something entirely new. And like, if you are getting frustrated, it's like, what are you doing to alleviate that? Are you creating more of a divide between you and your horse because your horse feels your frustration and your anger? Or, you know, like really like taking personal ownership for our feelings and responsibilities. And like I said, like a lot of the clients I was working with, they were also exploring other things like mindfulness outside of the horse. And ultimately it was going to benefit their relationship with the horse, but it doesn't involve the horse. Right. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I think the seminars that we did, I think, you know, we went out there with this vision of wanting to do something, and I think we did it. I think we helped educate those that took part, and it was, it was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
Yes, it was. So one of the other things, and the last thing I wanted to talk about, was the ability to pivot. So in the equestrian world, and by pivoting, let's say also adjusting to change of direction, that kind of thing. So for example, in the equestrian world, the ability to adjust and change and or pivot might come up when a horse experiences a lameness. And that totally blows out the plan that the horse and the rider had for that season, that show season. Okay. So you're having to deal with the lameness, and what are you going to do there? Or another instance of a pivot or change of direction might be, and this happens a lot, where all of a sudden you're changing coaches. So, you know, I had one client that was with a coach for her entire life, And then all of a sudden was working with a new coach. So there's new self-awareness there. There's mm-hmm. the ability to adapt and all that kind of stuff. And I think oftentimes when people go ahead and they are doing these pivots, it's because they feel stuck and they want to be unstuck and maybe get re-inspired or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that as an athlete?
Well, change is one of those things that in the intro, I'm a self-described seeker of wisdom, and change is one of those things that I often think about. The old saying is change is the only constant. And really being able to like pivot is just accepting that reality. It's like, well, nothing ever really stays the same. So who am I to say that now is not the time for change to happen? Mm. And especially like if it's outside of my control, like I've had nothing to do with it, then who am I to say that, you know, this isn't what's, you know, quote unquote meant to happen or the consequences of the circumstances that we found ourselves in. And I think too, like, especially as an athlete, because with athletes, no matter what sport you're in, you have your in season and your off season, and it's understandable that injuries happen in all sports. But in the same breath, like if you're spending your time worried about what went wrong, you're already missing out on the opportunities that lay before you. And me personally, I feel like it's wasted energy. I understand that like people can, you know, may not be able to move on, you know, depending on what it is, the circumstance and the challenge that they're going through. I understand that it's not for everyone, but in the same breath, like I think if people realize that they had more choice than they actually do, I think a lot of people might opt for moving on, because, you know, who knows? The thing is that there might be even something better around the corner. And it's one of those things that I understand that change is not easy, especially if it's, you know, been consistent. Like you said, your one client's had a coach for the entire life, which, yeah, like as soon as you have someone else coaching you and giving you pointers, and I'm sure there's an uneasiness to it. And that's not to say that like change doesn't bring about an uneasiness. Like I remember change in my life, it always feels awkward. It always feels new, but just reminding yourself that like change is the only constant, like the, you know, this is something that's new. It's going to feel normal soon enough. And you just got to keep moving through, because no one wants to spend their life missing all of the opportunities because they're thinking about what would have been or what could have been, or, you know, so.
Yeah. Getting stuck in the past and not being able to step up.
Yeah. Like let it go. And I think that really speaks to like two types of personalities, really, that rigidness, the person that like doesn't like change or likes things a certain way. And then like the easiness, or like what I like to compare to a river, right? A river flows around the stones. It doesn't fight the stones. It just, you know, moves around it and keeps going on its way. And the rigidity is the one where it's like, whoa, no, like this isn't the way things were, and I can't deal with this. And it's like, well, that's okay too, but just understand that like you're missing out on opportunities, right?
Yeah. So you are exceptionally good at pivoting, as I previously mentioned. So you changed things up after Boundless. You came home, you opened up Whole Health Fitness, and then you went from Whole Health Fitness to Lac La Croix as a teacher, and now you're the school's principal just after 3 years. So I mean, mm-hmm. that's pretty awesome. What did you notice in yourself that prompted these pivots?
Well, in the case of Boundless to Whole Health Fitness, or coming home, as I like to phrase it, I think a lot of it had to do with the passing of our father. And knowing that like mom was home alone and things like that. And also just, I'd been away for a couple of years more or less at that time. And I was like, no, it's time to go home. And that time in Ontario, teaching jobs weren't really abundant. And so I said, well, if I go home, what am I going to do? And lo and behold, I started a gym. So it's like, you know, it was one of those things. It's like, you know, rather than sit around on my thumb and on my hands and wait for a teaching job to open, I was like, no, I'm going to go and make my own job and make something of it. And at that point in time, I was 20, 28 or 29. And so I'd had quite a few years of gym experience. Like, what better way to encourage people to lead a healthy life? And I get to teach people about the thing I love the most, which is being active and stuff like that. So that's what really helped me pivot when it came to that. And then the shift to Lac La Croix was, I'd always had this desire to teach in the North, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Indigenous perspectives on life and living. And a lot of the perspectives I hold, I feel like have largely been influenced by Indigenous philosophies and stuff like that. And it was just an opportunity. I said, you know what? Like, I love helping people, and I can help people in the North. I can help people in the South, East or West. It doesn't really matter. But I was like, I'm not a businessman. I understood that. And rather than stick it out and deal and become miserable and, you know, like be bogged down and weighed down and resentful and all that toxic energy, I was like, no, I was like, change is uncomfortable. And I went on a 3-week training period where I didn't know anyone. And, you know, it was challenging. It was hard, but I don't regret anything of it. And I feel like Lac La Croix has been a beautiful opportunity for me to work and do what I love, but at the same time, learn so much. So.
Awesome. Yeah. You've done great work. What kind of advice could you offer anyone who's listening right now who might feel a little stuck, feeling the need that they might need to make this change or a change?
Right. Well, I think the biggest challenge when it comes to people recognizing that they want to make change is that they try to make too much change too fast. And too much change too fast gets us overwhelmed. It often leaves our tires spinning. And if, you know, like you're trying to, let's say, change your nutrition, it's like, well, start with one meal a day, right? Like, commit yourself to like understanding and maybe creating that meal that is healthy and it helps you get to where you want to go. And then rather than trying to change all your meals or your whole week or whatever it might be, I think starting small is a great place to start. So if you're looking for motivation to maybe, you know, it's New Year's resolutions, all of these things, pick something that's small and manageable, because I really think there's something to be said for momentum. I know that, like, for example, on days where, you know, I have lazy days and there are days where I don't really feel like doing anything. And sometimes I feel like that in itself is a reflection of being stuck, right? It's kind of like you're caught in this rut. On the days where you get like 100 things checked off your list, as small as they might be, like cutting the grass and like doing your taxes and like whatever it might be, it feels so much more productive. And I feel like you really allows you to step into that next day and really just carry that momentum forward. So my advice would be to start small, celebrate the victories, but also take time to reflect on the failures, and not in a way that's like critical, in a way that's like, oh, I'm stupid or I'm dumb or that I should like put myself down because I failed, but rather like, hey, like, oh man, who was the, I can't remember the particular inventor, but he said, you know, I never failed at anything. I just found 10,000 ways not to do something.
Is that?
Edison. I think it was Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? Like no one is going to be Mac Cone or on their first day. It's like, yeah. You need to take those baby steps and be okay with failure, because that's the beauty of life, is the underdog has to overcome something, right?
Now, what's this saying? How's that saying go, that the man on top, or woman on top of the mountain, didn't just land there?
Yeah, they're standing on the shoulders of giants that came before them, right?
Yeah, like, and they busted their butts to get up there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? So yeah. And I think, like, really just in terms of, you know, as the podcast has kind of touched on all these different things, pivoting and challenges and adversity, it's just really boils down to reframing your perspective. And I know that's easier said than done, especially if you, like, a lot of people are conditioned to respond in certain ways. But I think that if in those moments, people can just pump the brakes for a second and say, okay, this is how I want to respond, but how might I try something different, right? And just having that split second to like catch yourself before you go about the way that you always have.
Right. Now, what would you say to somebody who's, you know, has an issue with confidence, or somebody who's not decisive, who's feeling stuck and needs to make a change?
Well, I guess.
Like, where would you start with that person?
Right. Well, I would maybe start with something that's like small and tangible. Like my go-to is something physical, right? Like whether it's running or push-ups or sit-ups. But the point I'm trying to get to here is the idea that like, if you realize that like hard work, commitment and like discipline and being consistent with whatever your goal is, in this case, maybe developing confidence, it's like, you just need to make sure that you're taking the time to kind of, develop those faculties, I guess you could say. So starting with something physical, like maybe going for a walk, right? Today I want to walk 1 kilometer, tomorrow I want to walk 1.5 kilometers, so on and so forth. It's like incremental increases. And the thing is that you start to feel better. So I think physical challenges allow people to feel better, not only because their body has been used, and that's the thing that our bodies need. Like prior to modern history, like 99% of human existence was, you know, a struggle. It was a challenge. There weren't easy conveniences everywhere. And so our bodies are meant to move. They're meant to run. They're meant to jump. They're meant to fall, you know? And I think like really starting just with physical challenges, could be a walk, it could be push-ups, whatever you want, could be going to the gym 5 days a week, right? And getting to those goals. I think,
well, the physicality, you often talk about, it grounds you. So it helps your brain process all that stuff that's going on that you know, if you were sitting down worrying about it, you wouldn't get anywhere with it. But after, you know, doing something physical, then your brain sort of sorts it out. And there was something you said there about using the word consistency, you know, for somebody who needs confidence. I mean, I think I said this in my previous podcast, and I'm a firm believer, horses need consistency. So what's the irony of that?
Right. It's, I think it lends back to that thing. Like, it's easy to point fingers, but it's harder to point thumbs, right? Like point a thumb yourself, right?
Yep. Okay. So the other thing that you're big on, and I am too, regarding the aspect of the horse world is community. And how it shaped you. So like it really started to shine through back when you were working with Whole Health Fitness or working on it. You were very community minded. I mean, you were doing free boot camps in the park for donation, and those donations were collected and given to local, you know, the Elsie Craig Food Bank or, you know, food banks, that kind of stuff, charities. Mm-hmm. So when you did that, but it has carried forward to this time, both as a teacher and as a principal up in Lac La Croix, what skills have you brought forward with you into your life as an educator and administrator that you have learned at previous steps along your career path?
Well, the biggest thing is like, really, and it's interesting that you bring it up, is like management. Now that I'm in an administrative role, being responsible for a team of people and the importance of like creating a culture and a community, and one that like ultimately the goal is that the students receive the best education that they can possibly receive, or, you know, and like moving the community, if you will, and kind of like picking goals and getting people to pull on the rope in the same direction and striving to get to those goals, is the biggest, I would probably say the biggest thing that I've learned. It was something that when I started Whole Health Fitness and I realized that there was lots of interest, I ended up hiring on contracted trainers to help run the business. And I don't think I was really prepared for the managerial component of that, that really required me to kind of maybe be better at managing people, only because it wasn't something that I was mentally prepared to do, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And when I was promoted to principal and I understood that this was going to be me revisiting those same challenges that I experienced at Whole Health Fitness, I was more mentally prepared for it. And once again, like, just, I'm just my mind's spinning a bit based on what we've already talked about, but it was really that underdog mentality that when I was told that I was going to be the next principal for the school, and I knew I was like, managing people, like, here I am again, having this challenge put before me. I said, well, I don't think I failed at Whole Health Fitness in that capacity, but it wasn't something that I would say I was necessarily, like, it wouldn't be my shining trait, if you will. Mm-hmm. But then I said, well, damned if I'm going to let that happen again. Like, it's going to be something that, like, I'm going to make sure that, you know, the teachers feel like they're supported, make sure that the community feels like they're heard, make sure that, like, the parents feel like they can walk into my office and talk about serious subjects whenever they want. And once again, it's like, I went into it with an underdog mentality. It was like, people are going to second guess you, but I'm not going to let it slow me down. And there were even individuals in the community, because as of right now, I don't have my principals, First Nations principals certification. Fortunately, I'm starting it January 22nd, which I'm really excited about. but like, there were people that were discounting me because of that. And I said, go ahead, discount me. I'm going to be the best principal this school has had. And like, I'm going to help these kids and they're going to be my focus. And I'm going to make sure the staff team has everything that they need to make sure that they're, you know, able to give the quality education that the students deserve. So, yeah.
Good for you. Yeah, you've done such an amazing job. I always love it when we reconnect and you tell me all the stories of how the kids are doing and stuff. So good for you. So,
thanks.
And along that line, like with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching, I want to help foster a more inclusive equestrian community. You know, it's a big community, but it's also kind of rough, right? It can be really hard. It can be cutthroat. It's competitive, yes, because we're in the element of sport, but sometimes I think it's got this side to it that I'd really love to kind of open up, building a more of a community-minded aspect to it and helping each other grow. Is there any tips that you would suggest?
Put relationship before business. that would be, and I realize that's easier said than done for some people. And I guess it's really just a willingness, like, how willing are you to put relationship before business? Because I know that, as you kind of described, that the equestrian community can be super lovely and it's awesome, but it also can be cutthroat. And you didn't say it, but I would assume that maybe a lot of that cutthroatness comes from the business side of horses, just because a lot of it can be, you know, there's a lot of money tied up in the equestrian industry. But like I said before, it's like, if you're wanting to maximize your relationship with your horse, then put relationship before goals. And I think that really, in order to foster a community of equestrians that are supportive and encourage. And don't get me wrong, like, I used to play football against my friends, and it didn't say that as soon as that snap on my buckle clipped, like, they weren't my friends for that 60 minutes. And I had a goal in mind and I was going to run over anyone that stood in my way. Like, this is the name of the game. And so I'm not saying, like, you can't go to horse shows and clip that, you know, and you and your horse ride into that ring and you're focused, you're dialed in. Like, there's nothing that's going to stop you and your horse from completing your goals. But in the same breath, it's like, what are you like when you take off that clip? Like, are you, you know, interacting with people? Are you, you know, fostering a sense of community? And I think that's really it. I think being able to put community first and realize that, like, we're all here for the love of the same thing.
Right.
I think that's the common ground that perhaps maybe needs to be forged.
Yeah. Awesome. So when you heard your sister was getting into life coaching, what did you think? Do you feel like it's something that people could benefit from?
Absolutely. I think that, like, in the same way that people hire personal trainers for physical fitness, for the improvement of their physical fitness, a life coach is just to help you get your ducks in a row, so to speak. And I think also having someone that perhaps is a little bit more objective and maybe not a part of your social circle is also really healthy to have. In the case of a life coach, you help people, get their goals oriented and identify challenges and obstacles. And in the same breath, I think that's also what a counselor does too, to help people with, struggling with mental health challenges. And it's also really important to recognize that. So yeah, when I heard you were going into life coaching, I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. Like, I know you're someone that's had a world of different experiences. You've experienced adversity and sometimes, like, the strongest people are the people that have undergone the greatest challenges. And they're often also the people that are the ones that are willing to contribute to the conversation in a meaningful way. And yeah, it's fantastic. And I love what you're doing, and I'm proud of you. And
thank you.
It's awesome to really see this thing flourish. And, I must say too, like, this, I've been thinking about for a while starting my own podcast, like probably over the last year, but now that you've done it and I'm like, oh man, let's do this. I'm so excited to get a podcast going. So maybe when I finally like figure it out, you'll let your listeners know that your baby brother has a podcast now.
Absolutely. Okay, so on that sort of little bit of laughter, there is a funny story alert. Okay, so all my listeners here just have to be ready for this. So I don't even remember what year it was, but Rob and I ventured into what are called adventure races. And this adventure race includes mountain biking or trail biking. It includes canoe paddling and trail running. And you and I, do you remember what year it was?
I would probably say it's probably around like 2007, 2008, because I think I was still in university.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Because so this adventure race that we went in was up in Peterborough, and it was a two team. So it was two people that we were working together, and we opted to, sign up for the 4-hour race. And it was great. We put the two bikes on the back of my truck. We went up the day before. We stayed the night. We got up early. We had this like really nutritious breakfast. We were like ready to go. Now, to say to my listeners as well, a couple of friends had introduced me to adventure racing. Now, I'm a pretty physical, fit, strong person, but let's just keep in mind, I'm not a varsity football type of physical fit kind of person. So in the beginning of this race, Rob, do you want to describe how this all started?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the race, in order to kind of spread everyone out, basically said, choose one of your teammates. And, they handed you this manila envelope and they said that you have to run around this little town. I don't even remember what the town was called that we were in. But it was a really small town. Like, it couldn't have been more than a couple hundred people. And so you could run from one end of the town to the other in probably like 2 minutes. But they had these like special staples that you had to hole punch on this card that was in the manila envelope. And so my competitive spirit, I was like, all right, Toad, we're doing this. Like, I'm going to get us first. So
and just to interact, Toad, there, you've led it all up to the podcast world. Toad is my nickname. So now everybody knows.
Yeah. So I remember looking at you and just being like, all right, we're doing this. I'm like, I looked at who I was racing against and I was like, okay, I got this. And so I ripped open the manila envelope and I was off like a shot. And I remember like getting the four hole punches and I came out first running back to our bikes before we started our race. And the look on your face was like, oh my goodness, we're actually doing this.
There were a couple of hundred people in this area and I'm standing there watching you fly across this town going, oh my God, we're in first place. So, and if everybody's wondering, now enters the reality of adversity and mindset, because you and I trucked off on our bikes. Now, I would like to say that I didn't think the route for the bikes was all that well mapped. Let's just say. Right.
Yeah.
But ultimately what happened is that we ended up biking past one of our checkpoints, and we were biking and biking and biking. And ultimately, and this other, do you remember this other couple, this other team ended up following behind us, and we were forever. And then all of a sudden, I don't know how far away we were, but we got stopped at this checkpoint, and the people's look on their face was like, "Hey guys, how's it going?" We're like, "Yeah, we're in the 4-hour race." And the look on their faces were like, "Oh my God, you guys are at a checkpoint for the 10-hour race." Yeah. And describe that moment from there on.
Yeah. So this is a perfect example of adversity, especially considering I was, you know, I can be competitive. I'm not overly competitive. But in that moment, there was a huge letdown when we realized that we were so far removed from our course that we probably went from first to worst in like 20 minutes. It was a bit of a frustrating experience. And well, I know you like telling this next part of it.
Because the guy who was there, he's like, "Well, hey guys, you know, like you're never going to finish this race now in time. So if you want, we can just put your bikes in the back of the truck and I can take you back to base camp." Well, you and I both looked at each other like, "Well, that ain't happening. No Mitchell is going to throw their bike in the back and just call it quits."
Yeah.
So we decided, all right, fine. We're getting on our bikes. We're turning back around.
Yeah.
So we did. And I can honestly say that in that moment of realizing that we were heading back to something that quote unquote meant nothing was really disheartening, right?
Yeah.
And I wasn't the varsity athlete. Like I was just like, what the heck? So, and we were heading into the wind, of course, which made it even worse. And so I don't know how long down this heading back we were. But so this is me. I'm like, well, on the positive side of things, and then this is wrong. Toad, I am not ready to think about the positive yet. And I'm like, okay, we'll give it a few more minutes. So we biked along in silence. And then finally you started talking. And then the two of us just started to kind of like help each other along.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was definitely one of those things where it's like, you know, it's a very memorable experience. And I think like my response to like, is a testament to the fact that like you can be competitive and you can want to win and you can want to be successful and not, you know, like I'm still someone that learned a lot from that lesson, from that experience. And one is to never trust anyone else other than your teammates, you know, because we should have turned left. But that guy was like, "Oh, you guys keep coming this way." And we kept going and we were like, "Nope, shouldn't have." So, you know, there's lessons to be learned. Sure, I was a little grumpy in the beginning, but you know, I didn't allow it to like infect my environment, right? No. Like, I think that's the big part.
Eventually, we did start cracking jokes and started having some laughs and
absolutely. That kind of stuff.
I mean, in the end, I think we were only supposed to bike like 12 or 18 or 20 kilometers, and we ended up biking like 58 kilometers.
Yeah. Something insane, which was longer than the entire race itself.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't even get to paddle. We didn't even get to run. But the thing was funny because as we were getting closer to the base camp, I know I was like, damn straight, we got this. Like, look at how much we fought back and we're back. And do you remember we pedaled into it, but it was like at the back portion of everybody and no one was there because everybody was still out on the course. So it was kind of disappointing because I felt like we should have had a parade or somebody should have been there to at least clap for us.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was like one of those experiences where you're just like, well, we don't even get a welcoming committee. Like
there's giving
us a pity party right now because like we basically botched this race, but you know, at the same time, it's like, I think about like athletes that I've trained and the successful ones and also like professional athletes, like really it matters more about what you're doing when no one's watching than when the world's eyes are on you, you know, like, what are you doing? How are you responding? Like all of these things, it's easy to kind of curb your behavior because you're under the microscope or you're in the presence of someone that you don't want to offend or whatever. But those moments when you're by yourself and in failure are some of the most humbling experiences that you can have.
Yeah. I honestly,
just now, like we're laughing about it.
Right. Yeah. There's no anger about that one. I mean, mom and dad laughed their asses off when we got home and told them all this stuff. So that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. But those were definitely, that was a lot of fun. after the fact. Now, yeah. So as we're coming to the end of this so much fun conversation, I'm going to have this question that I'm going to ask people, and I want to ask them, you know, like, what was one of the biggest adversities that maybe you've experienced in your life, and what did you learn about yourself from it? But since we've already covered a lot of that within the body of the interview, I want to ask you, and you may have already touched on it, but what did you learn from the adversity we experienced during that adventure race about yourself or perhaps working with your partner?
Yeah, well, I think it's one of those things that, I'm a very self-reflective person. So even something that's happened several years after, I'll often think about and recognize the context in which I learned the lesson and just think about how things have changed and whether I have changed and whether I would respond differently now. But I guess to kind of speak to your question about really recognizing the adversity, I think that I really think the big thing is just being really adaptable, right? Had I been miserable the rest of that time with you and not been able to just let it go, that whole experience, which we now consider a memorable experience, a pleasurable experience, could have been terrible. It could have been I could have been miserable the whole way home and not wanted to talk about it because we lost, because we turned the wrong way, because of all of these other things. No, I think the big thing is just letting go of failure and recognizing I learned not, if I ever do another orienteering or adventure race, not relying on anyone else. If it's a teammate thing, obviously rely on your teammate and work together, but any outside person is no, I'm not listening to anyone. I'm going to trust my instincts. Okay. I'm going to listen to, and if I mess up, then I have no one else to blame but myself. But
one fact that we were siblings and came out of there, both of us were alive,
Yeah.
That's this good exactly. testament to our relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. For sure.
Rob, thank you so much for spending this time with me today. You and I always have been very good at having great conversations. And this one was just another one of those. It was awesome.
Thank you. I was just going to say thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. If people want to get a hold of you to follow up with anything that we have talked about here or get further insight into your thoughts and philosophies and stuff, where can they reach you?
They can reach me. My email is all lowercase, Rob Mitchell, that's two L's, OCT for Ontario Certified Teacher @gmail.com. You can also follow me on Instagram @thatbeardedteacher.
That bearded teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you that aren't watching this on the YouTube channel, Rob's got this big, what is it? Northman beard.
Yeah, I get it from Dad.
Yeah. All right. So for those who have been enjoying this episode of Hitting Your Stride, I want you to ask yourself how equipped you think you are to handle adversity. Are you able to pivot in a positive way? Do you know how to adjust your mindset to achieve your goals? These are things that Equestrian Elements Life Coaching can help you with. Visit my website at www.equestrianelementslc.com for more information about me and what I can offer you. So there you have it. For future episodes, I have some amazing interviews lined up, hoping to open and engage the horse world on issues and topics of interest in and out of the show ring. So, until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. You can subscribe to the podcast for new episodes of Hitting Your Stride on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You can check me out on Facebook and Instagram, and feel free to share whatever you've heard here with your friends. For that, I would be very grateful.